we wanted to talk about the state of queer media in America today.
It's complicated. You know, we, as presidents of the LA chapter of NLGJ, we've seen tremendous amounts of change just even in the last couple of years.
Honestly, the first step is going to be, is there representation in the newsrooms?
Welcome to This Way Out, the international LGBTQ radio magazine. I'm Brian DeShazer. Kuala Lumpur cops drop charges against 200 raid arrestees. The EU's top court orders same-gender marriage portability, and press coverage in the Queer Times of Trump. Those stories and more this week because you found This Way Out.
I'm Melanie Keller.
And I'm John Dyer V.
With NewsWrap, a summary of some of the news in or affecting LGBTQ communities around the world for the 2 weeks ending December 6, 2025. A raid on an alleged gay male sauna sex party in the Malaysian city of Kuala Lumpur is turning into a bigger bust than officials planned. After arresting more than 200 men on November 28th, Kuala Lumpur Police Deputy Chief Datuk Mohd Azani Omar was forced to admit not a single one of them admitted to being a victim of exploitation, so the case is gone. The 8 p.m. Friday night operation in the suburb of Chau Kit was carried out with the cooperation of the Federal Territory's Islamic Religious Department and Kuala Lumpur City Hall. Omar told reporters, "We detained 201 patrons and 7 employees aged between 19 and 60, including 24 foreigners. Condoms, lubricants, and other items Omar said that they believed to have been used for immoral purposes were confiscated. Same-gender sex is against the law in Malaysia. In the mostly Muslim Southeast Asian nation, those charged under 2 provisions of the penal code criminalizing unnatural intercourse and involvement in prostitution and exploitation could have faced up to 20 years in prison. However, 171 Malaysians were freed without charges for lack of evidence." Kuala Lumpur's gay, bisexual, queer men's support group, JJAKA, reports that many were held for more than 40 hours after a magistrate had ordered their release. Foreign men were remanded for 2 days and subsequently released. Muslim detainees could nevertheless be subjected to separate prosecutions under Sharia or Islamic law. Doctors, attorneys, teachers, and low-level government officials were among the detainees. The Education Ministry has already removed teachers caught up in the raid from their schools, pending the completion of ongoing investigations, according to the Straits Times. Efforts are reportedly underway to revoke the sauna's business license and shut it down. Barely 24 hours later, 13 men were arrested at an alleged gay sauna in Puri, Penang, as the crackdown on LGBTQ communities in Malaysia continues. The escalating anti-queer persecution is condemned by several domestic and global human rights groups.
All 27 European Union member nations must recognize the civil marriages of same-gender couples legally performed in any other EU member nation, under a landmark ruling by the Court of Justice. The highest EU court's November 25th ruling applies even where there is no domestic marriage equality. A gay Polish couple's 2018 civil marriage was performed in Berlin, where one of them also holds German citizenship. Poland refused to recognize their marriage. After Polish courts failed to rule in their favor, the couple took their case to the top Euro court. All but 5 EU members offer some form of legal recognition to same-gender couples. In addition to Poland, EU member nations Bulgaria, Lithuania, Romania, and Slovakia don't offer civil unions or marriage to their queer citizens. Katrin Hugendubel is advocacy director for the European chapter of the global queer advocacy group, ILGA. She celebrated the ruling that, she says, clearly states that the recognition of marriage status is key to enjoying EU citizens' fundamental right to freedom of movement across the EU. Polish Prime Minister Donald Tusk's promised Civic Coalition Party bill to create same-gender civil unions was introduced in October. However, President Karol Nawrocki of the formerly ruling far-right Law and Justice Party has promised to veto any such law.
Tokyo's High Court is the first to say that Japan's marriage inequality is constitutional. Four district courts have ruled otherwise, so the issue of opening civil marriage to gay and lesbian couples will now be up to the Supreme Court. The Sapporo, Nagoya, Osaka, and Fukuoka district courts have each ruled over the past 6 years that the ban on marriage equality is unconstitutional. However, Judge Ayumi Higashi's November 28th ruling upheld the constitutional definition of a family as a man and a woman and their children. The court said that any changes to civil marriage laws must be made by the legislature. The eight plaintiffs' demand for damages was also dismissed, 1 million yen, or about $6,400. Public opinion polls show a significant increase in support for marriage equality, but don't count recently installed Prime Minister Sanae Takeuchi. Japan's first female head of government insists that the family is an institution based around the equal rights of husband and wife.
The United Kingdom's Venerable Women's Institute will soon require new and renewing members to confirm that they were documented female at birth. Women's Institute CEO Melissa Green announced on December 3rd, "As an organization that has proudly welcomed transgender women into our membership for more than 40 years, this is not something we would do unless we felt that we had no other choice. They have no choice because of the UK Supreme Court ruling earlier this year that trans women are not legal women under the Equality Act. The trans ban begins as of April 2026. To Trans Plus Solidarity Alliance founder Jude Giatamaki, "It's cruel and a failure of this government to protect human rights, including freedom of association." For more than 100 years, the group has brought women together to learn, share skills, work together to become active citizens, and to improve lives in their local, national, and global communities. Ironically, transgender men are not covered in the Supreme Court's ruling. That means that while they are legally men, they will be able to join the Women's Institute because they were identified female at birth.
Finally,
imagine if your doctor came and told you that your quality and outlook on life could transform exponentially to the positive. Would you listen to that doctor? If you felt God's Holy Spirit surrounding you in ways that you haven't felt in years, would you have a sense that that might be something that God's okay with?
Reverend Dr. Philippa Fanouf had quite an announcement for the congregation of North Chile United Methodist Church near the city of Rochester in upstate New York on November 23rd.
"I'm affirming and saying to all of you that I am transgender. And so, the best way to put this is that I'm not becoming a woman. I'm giving up pretending to be a man."
Fanouf acknowledged that her announcement may still come as a shock to some of her parishioners, though North Chile United Methodist Church is already a welcoming congregation. She told congregants that the district would provide workshops and resources to support everyone concerned. She welcomed all questions and anticipated a few in advance.
"Here's some frequently asked questions. Is the United Methodist Church, did he tell the district superintendent about this? What about the bishop? Is he okay with this?" "Absolutely. Absolutely. They're the first ones that I went to say, how can I do this in a pastoral sort of way to let the congregation know that I love them and that we can do this in such a way that we can stay in ministry together. Is our Methodist theology okay with this?" "Absolutely." "Thank God for our revised this year book of discipline, our book of resolutions, our social principles that affirm this.
Fanouf may be thankful, but more than one in five congregations has chosen to disaffiliate from the denomination, since restrictions on participation by same-gender-loving and transgender parishioners and clergy were relaxed in 2019, according to the United Methodist News Service. Reverend Fanouf honored her parents' request that she note their opposition to her transition, but told The Advocate that her 12-year-old daughter was her strongest supporter. The overwhelming support she's felt for most everyone else has been a comfort.
I have to let you know that this is now the third month that I'm in hormone replacement therapy. In that first week, going back to what I said earlier, is if the doctor had something that could increase your quality of life exponentially, I'm here to tell you that it was just within that first week that I was really, truly happy for it for the first time in a very long time. Truly happy.
That was Reverend Dr. Philippa Fanouf announcing her transition during Sunday services on November 23rd at Upstate New York's North Chile United Methodist Church.
That's News Wrap, global queer news with attitude for the 2 weeks ending December 6, 2025. Follow the news in your area and around the world. An informed community is a strong community.
News Wrap is written by Greg Gordon and Lucia Chappelle, produced by Brian DeShazer, and brought to you by you.
Thank you. Help keep us in ears around the world at thiswayout.org, where you can also read the text of this newscast and much more. For This Way Out, I'm John Dyer V. Stay healthy.
And I'm Melanie Keller. Stay safe.
Our listeners support This Way Out in many ways.
By subscribing to our e-newsletter.
Email us at info@thiswayout.org.
And through your financial contributions to our program.
More information about how you can give is online at thiswayout.org.
Thank you.
You are listening to This Way Out, the international LGBTQ radio magazine.
And now it's time to set our dials back with the Rainbow Rewind, your look at the moments, milestones, and memories that shape our queer journey.
From hard-won victories to cultural firsts, from the unknown to the iconic legends.
We celebrate the people and events that remind us how far we've come and how far we still shine. I'm Brian DeShazer.
And I'm Sherry Lunn. This week, we celebrate Christina, Queen of Sweden, born December 8, 1626, who succeeded her father on the throne, ruling at the young age of 18. Ebba Sparr was her longtime intimate companion.
In 1981, the New York City Gay Men's Chorus becomes the first openly gay musical group to play at Carnegie Hall with their Christmas concert. And on December 8, 2015, openly bisexual artist and activist David Bowie's song Heroes was inducted into the Grammy Hall of Fame.
Now let's rewind to some key queer moments. In 1996 in the UK, South Yorkshire police placed a full-page ad in the Gay Times as part of a recruitment campaign. On December 10, 1948, the United Nations adopted the Universal Declaration of Human Rights.
And on December 13, 1973, the American Psychiatric Association voted to remove homosexuality from its list of mental disorders. In more good news, Buenos Aires, Argentina, approved civil unions for same-sex couples in 2002, followed by New Zealand in 2004.
That's this week's Rainbow Rewind.
Because our stories aren't just in the past, they're the pride that powers our future.
I'm Sherry Lunn.
And I'm Brian DeShazer. Stay tuned. More This Way Out is just ahead.
Can't you just see the sunshine? Can't you just
just like a friend of mine, hit me from behind. When I'm gone to Carolina, in my mind.
This is Dorothy Allison, author of Bastard Out of Carolina and numerous trashy pieces. You're listening to This Way Out, the International Lesbian and Gay Radio Magazine.
From the start of history, since a million BC, though we couldn't all be seen, we've been here. Even if we couldn't say LGBTQIA, all of us in our own way, we've been here.
Welcome to This Way Out. I'm Brian DeShazer. I am joined in a roundtable discussion by Hanson Bursick and Katie Carl, co-presidents of the National Lesbian and Gay Journalists Association, and This Way Out's own associate producer, Lucia Chappelle. Today, we wanted to talk about the state of queer media in America today. Hanson, why don't I start with you?
Oh, man. I don't know if there is a basic answer to that. It's complicated. You know, we, as presidents of the LA chapter of NLGJ, we've seen tremendous amounts of change just even in the last couple of years. The board of NLGJ LA at the tail end of the pandemic, since that moment, we have been really all over the place between layoffs and press freedom, dealing with the stuff both locally and nationally. And it's tough. I mean, it's a tough time out there. It's why our work is more important than ever. It's why, you know, me and Katie are really passionate about some of the initiatives that we're putting together to really elevate freelancers in particular. It's a tough time to be a freelancer. And now there's more freelancers than ever because there's more layoffs and there's less staff in newsrooms. So it's challenging. There are good things too, but it is... I'd be hard-pressed to say this wasn't a challenging moment for journalists in Los Angeles and beyond.
Before I go to Lucia, Katie, now you actually are a freelance journalist, like in KABC News. So you work in the newsroom, you work with news teams. In your experience on the ground, do you feel a change or a shift in how the company views queer journalists?
I would say I'm extremely fortunate with the company that I work for, especially in LA. I know it has a reputation of really supporting the queer community, from being the title sponsor to LA Pride to sponsoring us for our big event this year. In the newsroom itself, there are a lot of other queer journalists that are there. I think as a freelancer, you know, I'm more of a permalancer, is what people would call it, more of a permanent freelancer, meaning I work 5 days a week, 4 days a week. But I think what's interesting is when the convention for NLGJA was here in LA, the topic for freelancers was very much looking at where the election was. It could go one way with one administration, and it could go another way with a different administration. And looking at it as, well, if it goes with one administration, there might be a lot more work and for freelancers. So, you know, that could be an upside. And that was kind of the way it was looking before the election happened. Now, post that, post inauguration, it's very different because we weren't expecting for there to be so many new freelancers and so many more journalists being laid off that the work almost... there are maybe more stories to tell for the LGBTQ plus community, but now there's more journalists to try and tell it and more layoffs. So now the people who were working staff, who were covering different beats, now they are jumping into the scene of freelancing. And it's made it a lot more difficult, even more difficult than I think anyone was thinking it would be. So I think that's just for freelancing, at least, that's kind of how it's looked.
Well, thanks. And so, Lucia, you certainly have the longest experience of a queer journalist on our little mini panel here. What questions do you have for them? But my question actually for you, Lucia, is what do you think the state of queer media is in the United States from your vantage point?
I'm thinking that in a way we've come full circle In the early days of NLGJA, we were very much focused on getting queer journalists into mainstream media. And those of us, I would have to say that those of us who were always working in independent, non-commercial media were often looked down upon. What I see now, and I think it's very interesting that so many progressive journalists from the mainstream are now moving to independent platforms, Substack, YouTube, you know, all sorts of other ways of getting their work out there. It seems like now we're going to be racing to be independent as opposed to be racing to be commercial. But I wonder how the current situation is going to impact younger journalists who aren't accustomed to kind of gonzo journalism style that we came up in.
Yeah, I would say, you know, it's really interesting because, like, when I said there are benefits as well, there are things that are good. You know, there is this rise in independent journalism, nonprofit newsrooms, and the journalists that are making at least part of their living off of things like Substack. I mean, we are seeing this rise, and it's a good thing. I mean, we want more independent, sustained journalists that are working in our freelance community. You know, I think when we talk about freelancers at NLGJA here in Los Angeles, it really is at the top of mind for us because the way that we are thinking about it is how can we make freelancing sustainable? Like if the reality is that these newsrooms can't support full-time staff, which our ideal would be that they can, but if they can't, how can we make it so that these freelancers are able to live their lives, you know, to have an afforded, you know, healthcare, to be afforded, you know, the access to services, to be able to live here in a Los Angeles, which is, you know, one of the most expensive cities to live in the country. It's difficult. And what we don't want to see is our newsrooms being pushed out, our freelancers not being able to live here in Los Angeles, because what we know is that local journalists tell the best local stories. And if those local journalists can't live here in Los Angeles and are pushed out to the fringes of our city, you know, we lose so much. Our work beyond our events that we do, you know, trying to build community with journalists, we are now looking at different avenues and paths to support, you know, the journalists that are currently working, as well as, you know, provide platforms for emerging journalists, which is another big problem. You know, we're seeing less and less paths for young journalists coming out of college, and J school. You know, we're seeing less paths for them to get consistent work now.
You know, what I was also thinking about is the independent journalism actually opens the window to how many stories get told, and whether it's a small story that wouldn't make it to a mainstream story or doesn't fill the gap of time. But it does open the window of how much of our experience is being told from our own perspective. But going back to you, Katie, how hard is it for a queer story to get selected for broadcast?
So again, I mean, I'm in a newsroom that is extremely supportive, and that is not the case everywhere. My most recent job that wasn't here in Los Angeles was in Phoenix, and that situation was not nearly as supportive. But when it comes to will those stories make it to air, the first step is pitching that story. So in order to pitch that story, you either need to have someone in that newsroom who is of the community, or someone who knows someone in the community, or people in the community that are pitching their stories to that newsroom. The second part of that is pitching it. It's not about, is that story going to be held for June, or is it going to be held for LGBTQ History Month? That's not the case. If it's a story that needs to be told now, today, it will be. For instance, one of the stories that I covered was possible ICE sighting at the Abbey. Now, we receive people were at nearby bars, and the TV screens in all of the nearby bars had they had ICE is at the Abbey was written on the TV screens at the other bars, not at the Abbey. Now, come to find out, it wasn't ICE at all. It was the LA Sheriff's Department. They were conducting a raid on like pickpocketing. It was an undercover operation focusing on pickpocketing and other crimes that we all know happen in WeHo. Those stories, they've just become part of our daily news. In other newsrooms, however, sometimes they only want those stories in June. They only want those stories during LGBTQ plus History Month, if at all for that. So honestly, the first step is going to be, is there representation in the newsrooms? As I think, as a society, we're pulling away almost from broadcast media. Some of those newsrooms are shuttering. Some of those newsrooms are combining with others. So the amount of jobs are diminishing. Broadcast journalism is still here. It's not going to go anywhere. It might change. We might not be, you know, on DirecTV or Charter or Spectrum anymore or whatever the future holds for us, but broadcast news is not going to leave. And while those jobs are diminishing, they're still there and they still need people and they really, really need representation in those smaller markets to be able to tell the stories, for you to live in the middle of Montana and learn what their LGBTQ plus community looks like to tell their story. It's very, very important.
Thank you for joining us, Katie Carl and Hanson Burke, co-presidents of the NLGJA Los Angeles chapter, also known as the Association of LGBTQ plus Journalists. And as always, thank you, Lucia Chappell. You can listen to the extended conversation by visiting This Way Out on SoundCloud.com. And for the NLGJA, visit NLGJA.org. For This Way Out, I'm Brian DeShazer. Thanks for finding This Way Out, brought to you by the nonprofit Overnight Productions. News Wrap was reported this week by Melanie Keller and John Dyer V, and produced by Brian DeShazer. The Rainbow Rewind was written and produced by Sherry Lunn and Brian DeShazer. Brian DeShazer produced this week's Queer Journalist Roundtable. You heard music from Tchaikovsky's Nutcracker Suite and by Rachel Berenger and Shawnee Kish. Kim Wilson composed and performed our theme music. This Way Out thanks to the Yavanna Foundation, Richard Merck and Brad Payton of Silicon Valley celebrating their 50th year together, and all the listener donors who make this program possible. Ask us about how you can join them. Look for This Way Out Radio on social media, email us at info@thiswayout.org, or write to us at P.O. Box 1065, Los Angeles, California, 90078, USA. For coordinating producer Greg Gordon, associate producer Lucia Chappell, and the entire This Way Out crew, I'm Brian DeShazer. Thanks for listening online at thiswayout.org or wherever you get your podcasts, and on Radio Free Santa Cruz, Santa Cruz, California, WCRS Columbus, Ohio, CKUW Winnipeg, Manitoba, and a wide array of community terrestrial and internet radio stations around the world, including this one. Stay healthy, stay safe, and stay tuned.